Good morning, New Mexico, and welcome to the Santa Fe Radio Cafe. My name is Mary Charlotte. We're broadcasting live from the Santa Fe Baking Company on Cordova Road and streaming on the web at ksfr.org. We are podcasting at the website santafe.radiocafe.org, where you can hear the show whenever you want, thanks to Santa Fe's .foil computer services, and you can subscribe to the show on iTunes. Later on in the program, Robert Knott is going to be here speaking of the arts, and Linda Siegel will give us our legislative update. Right now, I would like to welcome Judy Hendricks. She is author of the brand new novel, her fourth novel, The Laws of Harmony, and she's going to be speaking at Collected Works this Sunday, the 15th of February at 4 in the afternoon. Collected Works being a bookstore here in Santa Fe. Welcome to the Radio Cafe, Judy.
Hi, Mary Charlotte. How are you?
It's great to have you. Thank you. Well, it's great to have you. Talking about your fourth book.
Yeah.
Now, this is one that starts in Albuquerque, Santa Fe, Taos, and ends up in the Pacific Northwest on a small island off the coast of Seattle.
Right.
Thus, having read all four of your novels, which I can't say about very many authors, those are sort of your places, the Southwest and the Northwest.
Right. The Southwest is my artistic place, and the Northwest is my retreat place.
And so you bring that to your characters.
Yeah, hopefully.
So this is a character named Sunny who grew up on a commune in northern New Mexico. This gave you the opportunity to find out what that life was like.
It sure did. I didn't really know much about it. I was about as far as you could get from that lifestyle back then. I was a suburban wife and working at a full-time job. And the only thing I knew about that kind of lifestyle was what I saw in the news. And so it just never
touched
me. Which
never did a very deep job of
no,
seeing
how
people were like.
It was all drugs, sex, rock and roll. Of course, that was going on everywhere in the country then. But
and still is.
And still is,
ladies and gentlemen.
Yes.
But it's interesting because your character, who during the course of the book is in her early 30s,
right.
Grew up on the commune and at age 18 said, I can't wait to get out of here, and never looked back until we get to the book. Why did she leave? What was it about that life that she wanted to get away from?
Well, she was one of those people who needs a little more structure and a little more privacy, probably like myself. I also think that, and I'm not giving anything really away, the tragedy that happened in her life was probably forever associated in her mind with the place. So she was very anxious to get out into a different lifestyle where she could forget all about the past.
What's one of the things that's interesting is that her mother is still there, although it's not really a commune anymore, but she's still there doing the same things and really holding a lot of the same values.
Right. Her mother was one of the true believers.
And what happens, I mean, I think that one of the things about communal life and people who lived on communes is that the kind of prevailing wisdom is, oh, they got over that, changed their values, and moved on. But this book shows another side of that, which I've seen in real life, which is those values really stay with a lot of people.
Yeah, I think they do, even though they may have moved away and, you know, gotten day jobs in the city and gone to law school or whatever. I think, in fact, I was reading an essay by a woman who had grown up in New York and then lived at New Buffalo for a while. And she said that one of the things that it gave her was a greater sense of self-reliance, because there was no real infrastructure on the communes. They did everything for themselves. And she said, now, before I call the plumber, before I call the electrician, you know, I think I could do that, because they had to do it.
And I suppose now people who were doing that then are looking at a potential economic recession where people are going to have to learn to do those things.
I know. Well, that's what was so amazing about these. These were city kids. Most of them were really young, in their late teens to, say, mid-20s. And they learned how to tan hides, farm, build with adobe. You know, they had to do it all.
The heroine is named Sunny. Her mother had named her Soleil, but she got sick of spelling it for people, and so she called herself Sunny. And she is living with a kind of a, I guess the man is her fiancé, but he's kind of acting like a bad boyfriend, and you're thinking that he's got something else going on the side, but he won't admit it. and then he dies in a car accident.
Right.
And so the and meanwhile, he's involved in some business dealings. So the book becomes something which I don't think you've done before, which is kind of a mystery.
A little bit. The only one I've ever done and that was anything like that was sort of Isabel's Daughter. You know,
right.
There was the mystery of what happened to her mother. But this was a little more with a nod to the mystery genre, I think.
But the unlike a lot of mystery book heroines, she doesn't even... She's the most reluctant of all possible sleuths. She just wants to get the heck out of there.
Yeah, she's just... Well, she's so disillusioned. She thought Michael was her ticket to the normal life, so... And when he proves to, when he checks out, you know, she's just so disappointed and disillusioned, she takes off.
And goes to the Pacific Northwest. And, you know, as always with novels, one doesn't want to give away too much of what happens. But it is an interesting contrast between before she leaves, she goes to see her mother on the commune, which is, or is it still a commune? It's turned into a bed and breakfast.
Yeah, it's a bed and breakfast. So her mother doesn't really live on that spot anymore, but she has a little adobe house up there.
And she goes to see her, and she's still beating and drinking herbal tea out of hand-fired
right.
cups.
And smoking dope.
And smoking dope. And they have not exactly a reconciliation, but it does show the contrast in this one young woman's life between her fiancé, her now-dead fiancé, who is a... he calls himself a serial entrepreneur, very big into business and software and all that, and her mother, who is extremely anti-corporate.
Right. I think Gwen is extremely anti-anything in the 21st century. She doesn't like the internet. You know, she thinks it's the Antichrist, and she's not into a microwave, and she just wants it to be like it was.
We're talking to Judy Hendricks about her new novel, The Laws of Harmony. Harmony comes from two pieces of the book. The commune was called Armonia, and the place that she ends up is a little town on an island called Harmony.
Right.
Tell us about the metaphor of harmony in this book.
Well, I was thinking when I started of the commune that's in Tennessee, I believe, or was in Tennessee. I don't know if it's still there, but... It was that whole idea of harmonious living in a group. And so it seemed like a good name for the commune. And since it was in New Mexico, it seemed like I should put it in Spanish. And the idea of having the little town in the Northwest named Harmony was sort of a hint that, you know, she's trying to escape her past, but you can't. So she ends up in a place that actually has the same name as where she's trying to get away from.
Right. It's also one of the things that is sort of, how should we say, it's probably experience that a lot of daughters have, which is that their mother is annoying but turns out to be right in certain important things.
Right. Very annoying, especially for Sunny because she's been avoiding her mother for the past 18 years.
Now, one of the things that I noticed reading it is that you are writing in the present tense for the ongoing narrative, but in the past tense for the parts where she's looking back on her life.
Right. It seemed like the logical thing to do.
No, nope, most people don't do that, though.
It
does work.
It works for me, and it's the way I usually write. I mean, I think a lot of people don't like present tense or they can't get into it, but for me it's the immediacy of it that I usually... almost always write in present tense unless I'm doing a flashback.
So the sense of place is very important, and I think it's wonderful for the reader who lives in this area. I mean, I'm sure you'll have readers all over the country, but for those of us living in the Southwest, to experience all the places that we know and the incredible dryness and then go up to the Pacific Northwest and have that damp, cloudy atmosphere all around us. And it seems like a metaphor for both lives that this young woman is living.
Yeah, I think it is. And also, it forces her to deal with a whole new set of things, even things as small as, like, suddenly her hair's curling. She didn't even know her hair was curly. Because, you know, here it was totally straight. But I think in this, you know, and certainly I love New Mexico. I choose to live here. But in this case, she has a problem with that whole dryness. To her, I think it's a metaphor for the dryness of her life and her emotions. And the Northwest is kind of, warm and comforting and, well, not so warm, I guess, but, it's almost a metaphor for the womb, kind of a rebirth for her.
Right. Now, another theme that runs throughout all your books is food.
Yes.
And you must be a great eater and drinker. I was thinking, there are people who study Shakespeare in just excruciating detail, and I was thinking, if somebody were to study your book in excruciating detail, they could tell exactly how many cups of coffee were consumed and glasses of wine drunk, and it's a lot.
Yes, and tea, but mostly food, because I've worked in food so much in my life, and it seems a great way to make a living. I mean, I enjoyed working in it. And if I can't work in it, I have to talk about it.
And it's also, it's very much of a symbol of who each person is at any moment of their lives. I mean, when the bad fiancé boy is doing well, they eat very well. And then when he goes bust, they're having crackers and bologna.
Right, and drinking wine out of boxes. And also, I think... food is one of the few places where Sunny and her mother can come together, and also where Sunny's mother and her mother can come together, because it's like it skips generations. So Sunny is really more like her grandmother.
Right.
And so in both cases, the women come together over food.
And baking in particular was the theme of two out of your three previous novels, and Sunny is a really enthusiastic baker. And I thought Judy must love to bake.
I can't help
but put yourself into your heroines to some extent.
I do, and it also, every book gives me an excuse to make up some new recipes. Like in this book, it's blackberry brownies.
I know, they sounded good.
They are. I made them, and so I'm going to put the recipe on my website.
That's interesting. Did you ever read the book Doña Flor and Her Two Husbands by the Brazilian author Jorge Amado?
No, I haven't read that.
It's the most, even more than your books, full of food book novel that I've ever read, and it's filled with recipes that are actually on the pages.
Well, I'll have to get that.
Yeah, you could have it. You could have a Laws of Harmony cooking guide.
Right.
So. I was reading at the end of your book, there's kind of a little reader's guide, and one of the things that you said was that it's amazing to you how different each novel is. Tell us about the experience of starting each new project.
Well, you start each new project having completely forgotten how to write, and you learn all over again. And because each novel is so different, you learn different things with each one. This novel was a great teacher of how to rewrite, which I wrote this novel more times than any, including my first novel.
Really?
Yeah. And it's also, it was also a great teacher of research, because I love research, but I have never done as much as I did for this book. Between the commune, and I got to learn how to ride a motorcycle, and which was really fun. But basically, I've heard a lot of authors say that you forget everything you know until you start, and it can be a little scary when you first sit down to start a new novel, but then you pick it up and it kind of takes over and it starts to teach you what it has to teach you.
Did you know the whole story, in other words, the solution to the mystery and all of that, when you started?
Oh, no.
What did you start with? What was the seed idea?
Well, that's an interesting question, because writing a novel about communes was the farthest thing from my mind. And then my best friend gave me Lisa Law's book for Christmas a couple of years ago, Flashing on the 60s.
Right.
And I started looking at it, and I got really intrigued, because, as I said, that was very far from my life. And I was just curious, and then I started looking things up on the web. And if you're a writer, you know that when you start looking things up on the web, there's a story coming usually. So I was looking things up on the web, and I came across an old newspaper clipping from the Taos News, and it was about the child that was killed at the New Buffalo Solstice Party, and that was the start of the story. It was really a riveting moment for me.
And it went on from there. It's funny because when I read you saying that each novel you're starting all over again and it's brand new, for the reader of your work, one sees the themes, these sarcastic, wisecracking heroines who get away from some dude who's not good enough for them but have to remake their lives.
Right.
That seems to be happening over and over. And people finding their roots in one way or another.
Right, and I think this novel is even more into that finding the roots part because of the discrepancy between Sunny and her mother.
Judy Hendricks is the author of four novels. The latest is The Laws of Harmony, and she will be speaking on Sunday, the 15th of February at 4 o'clock at Collected Works Bookstore on West San Francisco Street in Santa Fe, and that's right across from the Lenzic Theater. Judy, thank you so much for being with us.
Thanks for having me. It's great to see you.
We're going to take a break right now. Robert Knott will be with us in just a moment. Please stay tuned.